Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings. Let it rise.
It's 4 minutes after the hour. Good morning, everybody. Bill Arnold here. It's Friday. I can just believe I still have the job. Welcome to the morning show. There are roughly four Fridays a month. And from what history tells me, people tend to like this day slightly more than the others. Why? I have no idea. So I was reading this morning about that is the 50th anniversary of the Heimlich maneuver. I think Dr. Heimlich recently died, actually. I don't know that for a fact, but he established this protocol, which has been credited for saving many lives, but perhaps not as many as it could have, because the maneuver, although it's wonderfully simple to execute, is actually kind of has a marked flaw, because it requires the choking victim, before anything can be done to help him, to first alert other people to the fact that they're choking. And some people, it turns out, are extremely reluctant to do so. Sometimes Dr. Heimlich said that bemoaning how easily human nature can become a threat to human life. That is loaded with spiritual implications, isn't it? Rebecca's giving me the big nod. A victim of choking becomes embarrassed by his predicament and succeeds in getting up and leaving the area unnoticed. If no one happens upon him, he will die or suffer permanent brain damage within minutes. When I read that line, how easily human nature can become a threat to human life, that got my attention, because that's really true. Human nature is a problem.
Well, and there's so many times when I think if you take that and apply it more metaphysically, perhaps, or metaphorically even, that we do that. We isolate. When we find ourselves in a threatening situation where maybe it's even of our own cause, that we're the ones who are putting our own selves in danger, spiritually speaking, maybe, instead of fessing up and asking for help and being honest, we tend to isolate ourselves. We don't want to be embarrassed or ashamed or other people to think less of us. And so we go run away and hide rather than go to the place where we can actually be saved.
Yeah, no kidding. And right before we move on to the next topic, this caught my eye as well, Rebecca. The Oklahoma town gives the big okay to boogie down. Henrietta, Oklahoma, it's okay to kick up your heels again. It took a few minutes Tuesday for the town council to toss a decades-old dance band. The dancing hoo-ha started when, just before a Valentine's Day dance was planned, a Henrietta resident raised the point that an ordinance was on the books banning dances near churches. The law had never been enforced, but the law was still on the books. She said, "Dancing is not a crime. I've been to weddings, and I've seen older people dancing, and I think it is a crime. I think it's second-degree eye slaughter."
It might be. Yes, I could think of situations where it might be. But, I mean, behold how the times have changed.
Oh, I agree.
Back in my day.
In my day. 7 minutes after the hour. Good morning. Thanks for being with us. I'll take a short break, and when we come back, we've got a very interesting guest coming up. There's the cliffhanger for you. Be back in a minute. It's 8 minutes after the hour. Good morning. Bill Arnold here. Let's learn about the Bible, huh? This is the segment that I just invented yesterday that I got no approval on whatsoever. But things you might not know, but you would fake like you do. You ever done that before, Rebecca? Get a question about
yes,
the Bible?
Yes, all the time. I'm an expert in it.
I just forgot. I knew that. Of course I did. All right. Here's a quick question. Who was Seth? Okay, the winner, if you want to be the first caller to give that answer, you will win my personal bootleg copy of Rocky IV. Trying to clear stuff out of my closet. And the phones are not lighting up. So, Rebecca, do you know the answer?
I believe I do, yes.
Okay, and who was Seth?
Son of Adam and Eve.
Number three.
Number three.
Third son. Very good. Really good. You know, I saw that.
Do I win Rocky IV?
If I brought it, would you watch it?
Maybe.
Yeah. It's VHS. So,
oh, I'm not able to watch it then.
Yeah.
I don't even know where a VHS player is.
I always kind of laugh when I see the bumper sticker that says, hate is not a family value. When there was only one family on the earth, there was
true.
A murder inside of it.
That's so sad.
I would say hate is a family value. All right, here's another pop question for you, Rebecca. How many psalms are there? You're under no pressure to answer this.
No pressure at all, but the clock is ticking.
It is.
160.
150. 150. And they're divided into five books, ending respectively with Psalm 41, 72, 89, 106, and 150, each of which closes with some form of the benediction. There you go. All right. And the last question in our Bible learning exercise is, what is the difference between created and made? And created means something was made out of nothing. Made means formed or developed out of something already existing. In the account of the beginning of this world, the word created is used three times. How cool is that?
Out of nothing.
Yeah.
Now something.
Yeah. So when someone might ask you a question about Bible history or something, and you feel like, oh, I don't remember that. I mean, you go through that, don't you? You go, I kind of forgot. But you kind of fake like you remembered.
Well, I just went through it like 2 minutes ago. Did you? Were you not here? I forgot how many psalms there were. I used to know that. I promise. I went to Sunday school. I used to know that. And so you might step out there and give it a try. But I think it's honestly better just to be real in that moment and to say, you know what? I think I know that. But let's look it up. Let's find out and not fake. Oh, yeah, sure. I know that. And then have it stop there or have the conversation be quelled by our own, you know, fears or arrogance.
Yeah, that's really true. So I was reading a story of a woman in Texas that gave birth to a 14-pound, 2-ounce baby. Now, I'm just going to talk to the ladies right now. After you hear the words 14 pounds, does the 2 ounces really matter?
It does if you're going for the record.
Yeah, I suppose. I just wonder how big that kid will grow up to be, which actually brings me to my next story. Boy, nice segue, Bill. You know, it is a football player's dream by his senior year to get an offer at the college level. And my next guest already has 20 offers, and he's only a sophomore. All right, so we're going to take a little break. I think when we come back, we're going to talk to that young man. You are listening to Faith Radio Mornings. Bill Arnold here. Thanks for being with us today. I think the snowstorm is kind of averted for the Twin Cities here, which makes me personally very happy. Be back in a minute. Minutes after the hour. Good morning, everybody. You know, it's a football player's dream by his senior year to maybe get an offer to play at the college level. My next guest has already 20 offers, and he's only a sophomore. Quinn Carroll is your typical 6'6", 290-pound 16-year-old. He's the fifth boy in his family, followed by two sisters that are probably staring at him right now in the kitchen. And I always get nervous calling this early because I do not want to interrupt his first morning feeding. You bother a guy in the middle of his 37-egg omelet, and you're a fool. Anyway, Quinn Carroll, welcome to Faith Radio.
Thank you so much.
I'm so glad you got up for me this morning. You are getting a lot of attention from schools all around the country. You have 20 offers right now. How crazy is that?
Yeah, it is crazy. This completely caught me by surprise. I had no idea this was happening.
So what is it like when you get to travel to these schools to look at their athletic facility and the locker rooms, and you probably get all kinds of cool jerseys and hats? And tell us what that is like.
It's really fun to see all the facilities. You never know what each school is going to have, but each school that I've visited has had great facilities. And, it's always fun to put on the jersey and take a picture and stuff like that.
Now, you've been able to meet some pretty impressive coaches with some pretty impressive coaching histories. What was it like talking to Urban Meyer at Ohio State?
He's a great guy. Same with Coach Harbaugh. They they really know how to put together a presentation, and they also are really good with recruits. They're not dismissive at all. They want to spend time with them, and they want to get to know you and build a relationship. So if you were to go to that school, it would be like a family.
That's really cool. So I know that you have a love for the Lord and that you are always going to want to put God first in your life and live out very intentionally, because God has given you this size and this strength and this ability to play football. Tell us a little bit more about
that. Well, yeah, I've been completely blessed with this size and strength and ability to train at places to get bigger, faster, stronger, and ability to travel and see these schools and stuff like that, because I don't believe I would have any of these offers if I didn't have the ability to go to the schools and my size and strength that's been blessed to me by God.
Yeah. Now, people don't necessarily, they're not quick to invite you to a backyard barbecue because you have been known in the past on occasion to block the sun. So what is that like, probably being the biggest kid in the school? Now, has anyone ever tried to pick on you, and is that person still living?
No, it's no issue for me. Nobody really picks on me. That's hilarious, though.
Oh, good. Now, I heard your testimony, and it was beautiful, and it was brilliant, and it was articulate, and you had a very simple approach to how you wanted to look at your faith life, and it was three things. You wanted to pray more seriously. What else? I know it's early.
I wanted to be more devoted to my faith life instead of just going through the motions.
Yep.
And my story was just how I connected it to back in this was seventh or eighth grade when my dad, he challenged me to get down on the floor and do a couple of push-ups, and I couldn't do one. So I connected that to now me being more devoted to weightlifting.
Mm-hmm.
And so a couple of years ago, I was just kind of going through the motions, going to church every Sunday and not really listening and filling in the coloring books. But now I feel like I'm more devoted, and I just hope that it keeps growing as I get older, especially now that I've been blessed with these opportunities.
Yeah. Now, my memory said that you said, I want to pray more seriously, read the Bible more frequently, and have fellowship as often as I can. What a great approach to keeping your faith life nice and strong.
Yeah.
You know, I think boys' voices, I think girls go through puberty somewhere between the ages of 10 and 13. I think for boys, it's like Tuesday at 1:30. So, Quinn, when did your voice change? Like when you were five?
No. I was always a big kid, but my voice didn't change until maybe I was like 13 or 14.
Okay.
Now probably around there.
You come from a football family. You've got four older brothers, two younger sisters,
right,
and a dad that played football. What was that like growing up in a family with so many older brothers?
Well, it was awesome. Get-togethers are always something to look forward to, and you grow up tough and strong because your older brothers will pick on you and stuff like that. But growing up in a football family, there's always a love for football, and you're following every game on Saturday and every game on Sunday. The weekends are kind of taken over by football, and everybody's at every game. So it's awesome to come off the field and have my four older brothers standing there waiting for me and my two younger sisters either at home or there at the games too.
So
my parents.
Yeah. So when you sit down at the dinner table or the breakfast table with your four brothers, You know, what does your mom say to you guys? Like, try to keep it off the walls, that kind of thing?
Yeah. No, no, she loves it. She'll sit down with us and eat with us, but she doesn't have many rules because she knows it's going everywhere anyways.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the responsibility you feel, Quinn, as already a natural-born leader, even as a 10th grader. You play at Edina High School, and you've got you're a 10th grader, and you're already in kind of a huge leadership role, and yet you want to be always aware of sharing your faith and encouraging others. And, you know, what is that like when you're a 10th grader and everyone's kind of looking at you?
Well, it's awesome to have a platform because knowing that I'm a child of God and I'm going to share his word. It's great to have that platform to be able to, because I'm sure there are some kids that don't have that platform that want to share the word of God, but they're not able to because they're not listened to. Like, people don't really care what they have to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like this recruiting has helped me with that also. Kids turning to me, asking me questions, and I can respond in a, as a faithful man would,
mm-hmm.
Just to share the word of God and spread his word.
Mm-hmm. Now, like in the course of the last day, you've had a couple of offers added. You had 18, and then because of yesterday, I think you're up to 20 now. What two schools were added yesterday?
USC and Auburn.
Okay, is that the University of Southern California?
Yes.
Game over. I know where I'm going. Beachfront Villa? Are you kidding me?
Right.
Yeah. Now, I would imagine there are still going to be more offers coming in. Do you feel that that's a chance that that's going to happen?
I do feel that that's a chance. I'm visiting Alabama and Clemson. In March.
Oh, those aren't big football towns, are they?
No, not at all.
I didn't think so.
But maybe they offer, maybe they don't.
Okay.
But also Notre Dame and Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Those four are kind of the schools that I would like to visit, and those are schools that I would possibly attend. So an offer from them would be awesome, but if I don't get any more offers, that is no problem for me. I've got all.
You got plenty to pick from, don't you?
Exactly.
Yeah, it'd be great to hear from Nebraska and Notre Dame. What a great school Notre Dame is. When I was a senior, I had 23 rejection letters from colleges, which was a bummer because I applied to three schools. So you're in a completely different position where you're already sitting on 20 offers, and you're just a 10th grader. And it's your desire to live for Christ and spread the love of the Lord with others and be a positive role model for other kids. And Quinn Carroll, you inspire me.
Well, thank you.
So what's your first class this morning?
I've got choir this morning.
Awesome. You're a soprano, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. That's what I thought. Well, Quinn, thanks so much. I'm so proud of you. Have a great rest of the day and a great weekend. And we will be looking forward to hearing what school gets chosen in the next couple years.
All right. Thank you so much.
You bet. Have a great day. It's 26 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to have lots more. Dr. Rosemary Stein is going to talk to us about learning the language and how difficult that can be. And I know for a fact that is not easy, especially if you're trying to learn like Chinese characters, because the spoken language and the visual language are two different things. And how do you blend those together? This can be an interesting conversation. Be right back. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody. So glad you're with us today. Bill Arnold in studio. I'm going to take a little news break. Easy for me to say. News break. Be right back. I always appreciate Michael Harrington from SRN News. Have you ever tried doing your own personal Michael Harrington impression in your car when you're driving? Will you try the Michael Harrington? Ever tried that? I do. I tried it once. It wasn't very good. All right. In the daily routine of life, we sometimes forget that God is at work in the world and in our lives. Pastor Carter Conlon reminds us today of Romans 8:28.
And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God and to those who are called according to his purpose. And I think that verse is specifically pertinent now because we're living in some very difficult days. And a lot of people may not understand the days we're living in, and they're reaching out and saying, God, what's going on? I had a kind of a view of the way my life was supposed to go. And so many can't see God behind the scenes and what he's actually doing and how he's preparing us for this hour in which we're living in. But thank God for the knowledge that all things do work together for good. I'm blessed by that verse.
Are you blaming God for what ought to be blamed on Satan? This is Jim Garlow. I was listening to a TV interview about a child who was severely deformed. The parents said, "We don't know why God did this, but we were so lucky to find a plastic surgeon who could correct it." I was saddened to hear that response. How much better to have believed and said, "We don't understand why in our broken world that the enemy has been able to inflict suffering upon people, including our child. But we praise God that in his wisdom, he's given knowledge and the skill to physicians, and he's given us resources to provide for our child's care so that he can be made well." See the difference? Heartache and pain and suffering comes from the enemy. Scripture says all good and perfect things come from the Father. For more, go to jimgarlow.com. Live out your faith.
Morning, everyone. 36 minutes after the hour, changing the culture one child at a time. That is what Dr. Rosemary Stein says all the time, and we love her for that. She is on the studio line this morning. Good morning, Dr. Stein.
Good morning. So nice to be here.
Thank you so much. Let's talk about how hard it is and how difficult it can be to become a fluent reader. I was hearing the other day that if you are not literate and you cannot read by the fourth grade, you're whole trajectory of your life is in trouble.
Yes, that's true. And God made our children's brains so that at certain ages they're able to absorb things the best. Sort of like language. You're able to learn a language the best but before you're an adult. Even better before you're 12. And so reading is the same way. Those neurons and the special places in our brain that learn to read the best do so best before a child is, let's say, about 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm. So this article that I want to talk to you about, it says, why do we have millions of children who don't become fluent readers? And the answer is easy. Our education establishment prefers methods that don't work. Yikes. Talk about that.
Yes, that's what the article says, and I'm finding it easier and easier to believe that, but I find it harder and harder to believe that there would be such enemies against our children. But what happens is that today we have a reading method, and most parents are familiar with this. It's called sight words. And it's under the premise that many words in English cannot be broken down and don't sound the way they look. And so because of that, we just teach them the whole word. But they're translating that to every single word in English. And so if a child sees block and black, he essentially thinks that that is the same word. And so since black occurs more frequently than block, they'll say black. And you're saying, well, why are you saying that? Can't you see the A there? And the child doesn't see the A because he says he only sees the block of letters. And therefore, every time he sees that grouping of letters, he says just one word.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the way our children are learning to read. What they're doing essentially is they're guessing, and they're sort of mini pictures that our kids are guessing all the time.
Well, I do that as an adult. I look at a word and I try to guess how I'm going to say it.
Well, and this method has been there since the 1930s. If you're familiar with somebody called John Dewey, it was sort of instituted by him. And so John Dewey was a progressivist and an elitist. He thought that only certain people should know how to think and be the ones to have power. And so you can see why we would have been taught since many years ago, 80, 90 years, how to read in an incorrect way. When you can sound out your words, the number of words that you have in your vocabulary armamentarium is endless.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have to memorize each word, you can only have maybe 500, 700 words.
Okay. Now, you talk about sight languages, picture languages, and they are like Chinese, for example, and there's no alphabet to learn. You have to memorize each one of these diagrams or designs one by one, don't you?
That's right. And so they have designs that are words, so you don't sound anything out. The Egyptian language is the same, Chinese, many of the Asian languages are the same way. But phonetic languages such as Greek and Latin, English now, which derived from Greek and Latin, are phonetic and so much more. It's like a puzzle that you solve every time, and that's why kids like learning to read if you introduce them to reading the right way, because they're solving a puzzle, and that's why when you show them something like L-O-T, and they put it together, they go, lot, and it comes out of their mouth, they get very happy because they've put something together and they've solved this great puzzle, and then they can go on and figure it all out. Sort of like Helen Keller when she put her hands under the water and she figured out that each one of those letters formed a word, and that word was water, and there was the water pouring on her hand. It's just, wow, I can't believe this. I've discovered the mystery of life, and kids love that.
Mm-hmm. Because the child's brain is so pliable at that point. My little great nephew, who's 7 years old, is in the process at his school of memorizing the entire book of Proverbs by the time they graduate 12th grade. He's already through three chapters. So I got a video sent of him rattling off Proverbs chapter 3 without missing a beat. I'm going, you're seven. And
That is absolutely fantastic. And you remember when we would learn the Pledge of Allegiance and we were four and five?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't even know what it was. But those words come back to your great-grandson?
Great-nephew.
Great-nephew.
Yeah.
And the words come back to him, and they will minister to him someday. And I love that the way that children's minds can absorb words without necessarily understanding the meaning of what they're reading, because that, as it says in the Bible, teach it the child in the way he should go, and when he is grown, it shall not depart from him.
Mm-hmm.
And what it really is getting to is that those words, little by little, will come back, and they will minister and maybe even save him.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting what that did to me, because I get this random text from my sister that has him rattling off Proverbs 3 for perfect memory in the car on the way to school in his little ski jacket all zipped up. And I'm thinking, okay, enough of that. I'm going to start memorizing Proverbs chapter 3. Enough of that. I'm not going to let him get away with it. So
that's great. But of course, it's going to take you a lot longer.
Oh, you think?
Oh, yes.
You think? Yeah. Well, I've got the first verse down, and it's only been 9 months, so I think I'm doing good.
Okay. You keep that up.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about ADHD. This is a fascinating topic for me because, there's a psychologist that's saying that it could possibly be an invention rather than a serious condition. And I'm thinking back of grade school and my friend, Mike, who probably would have had ADHD stamped on his forehead, but we didn't medicate kids back then. And today, at age 48, Mike is a retired multimillionaire. I'm going, thank goodness we didn't medicate the kid.
Yes. Well, I guess I would be called a bit of a tweener. I think these children's brains are different. They're most likely more right brain than left brain. And so they don't think the same way that many of us, let's say 80 to 85% of us do. And because they're different, they're considered abnormal, and that something needs to happen so that they think like us. instead of harboring and let's say fertilizing that different soil and seeing if you get a very different kind of wonderful produce. So we've thought that the differences in somebody else's brain are a disease instead of thinking that is a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And that gift, when you have a bigger gift, it has to be cherished and cared for more, not less. And so those children need some extra attention from their parents, from their teachers, from educators around them, and even from their neighborhood, the grandparents, so that we can truly utilize and bring out that gift that they have. But instead, what we're doing is we're sedating them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not that they don't have we'll call it a condition. I call it a gift that is different from the other children. But the avenues that we're using to bring forth good from that, I think, are counterproductive to that child's outcome.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Stein, do you think that a short attention span has always been a part of our brain, but just modern technology has done a better job of bringing it out of us?
I do, and I think that also a short attention span is a characteristic of childhood. And the earlier that the childhood is, like if you're 4 and 5 and 6, your attention span is going to be shorter. And so moms and educators have to nurture that child and teach them and exercise them out of the short attention span by doing certain exercises. And we're not doing that today.
Mm-hmm.
And so our children, when they arrive to school, are not school ready because we're not teaching them the things that they need to know to be able to get to be able to sit quietly and pay attention in school.
Mm-hmm. If you have a question for Dr. Rosemary Stein, maybe you are dealing with a child that is ADHD or might be, and you've got a question, you can certainly give us a call this morning. We will take that call at 1-877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. We'll take a little break. When we come back, we'll take callers. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. Bill Arnold. We'll be right back. Forty-eight minutes after the hour, we're talking to Dr. Rosemary Stein, and she is an advocate of changing the culture one child at a time. We're talking about ADHD, and there is a pretty well-known Harvard psychologist or psychiatrist that says that maybe it's an invention rather than a serious condition. Rosemary, let's go back 50 years. Okay, we have a 7-year-old child who is bored in school and disrupts the class. Back then, he was called lazy, but today he is said to suffer from ADHD, and that's why I think the numbers have really gone up on this.
Well, and once again, I tend to favor the child, so I wouldn't call the child lazy, but maybe he's bored,
mm-hmm.
or maybe he's already learned the material, and so he's gone on somewhere else, and you're not going to get him back. But I see that happen all the time today, where it's the brightest kid who is bored out of his wits in the classroom that's acting out, and that kid's labeled ADHD. But that kid tends to be really smart and bright, and we're not utilizing that kid's gift in his intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have other kids who we could, I guess, say that they don't have the work ethic that other children have, and those kids can also be helped and nurtured so that they learn adequately too. But we're not getting to either one of those two sides. We're not getting to the ones that are a little bit slower to learn, but we're not getting to those bright kids either. And I remembered we back in the 70s when I was growing up in New York City, we would really help both ends of the cycle, those very quick to learn that were called intellectually gifted back then. We would precipitate the learning cycle, and we would have them at a 10th or 11th grade level by the time they were in 6th or 7th grade. But the ones that were a little bit slower to learn, they actually had smaller classrooms, and they had two teachers for the smaller classroom so that they can get them up to the regular grade level. But like I said, today we're not doing either one of the two. It's like we forgot how to educate our children.
Mm-hmm. I have a question from a caller who said, how much do you think our technology, video games and tablets and et cetera, might be adding to the ADHD issue?
I think actually, and that's an excellent question, but I think quite a bit. One of the things that I tell the parents as the children are coming in today, and about 70% of my kids are coming in with an electronic device in front of them, and they're playing on it as they're walking down the hallway or as they're waiting for me to come into the room, is I take the moment to tell the parent not more than 1 hour. One, because the eyes, the retina, I believe, is getting damaged by the blue light that's emitted by the electronic device. But the other thing is because it sets up brain pathways that were different from what I believe they were meant to be. And so everything is instant. We live in an instant culture, but we also live in an instant world when we're digitally connected. And so that's setting up so the children think that instant gratification is a normal thing. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lack of patience and a lack of, like, working things through and slowing ourselves down.
Mm-hmm. And aren't adolescents by nature have a tendency of being a little anxious? Isn't that kind of normal? You know, they've got all these decisions and a lot of drama and all that.
And they think that these problems should be resolved once again instantly. They're hooked into TVs where they think that the reality show is actually reality and that that's the way that life turns out. And so we shouldn't be surprised when our kids are that dramatic. But to get back to the answer to that question is I think we're probably precipitating ADHD by quite a bit. I'd say probably at least 30 to 40%. If not more, because of the electronic devices. And one of the things I tell the parents is to disconnect and have nothing come between that child and the mom or dad. And so for the time being, turn it off. And then they come back to me 2 weeks later, and the child is actually listening to mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first thing to start with, is to turn off the electronic devices as much as possible, or limit it at least to 1 hour a day.
But, Rosemary, the question is, how long does it take to get an appointment with a doctor? Well, here on Faith Radio, it's 56 seconds. We've got Sandy on the line from Minneapolis with a question for Dr. Stein. Welcome to the show, Sandy.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning,
Sandy. Thank you. My question is twofold, or with a comment, and it relates to what you said a few minutes ago regarding the attention span of older toddlers, preparing them before they enter school. I was wondering if you could elaborate on that. And then secondly, in regard to what you just said about children disconnecting or unplugging, I've noticed that there's a lot of young adults in our life where they're very intentional about not allowing any kind of screen time with their babies up through age 4 or 5. And I think what you said speaks to the effects of them being just more relational and more engaged with us adults, those little tiny babies.
I couldn't agree with you more. I love that you already have put it all together, and our toddlers are suffering from a lack of deliberate attention. In other words, you're giving them attention because you're building them, and we tend not to really understand that the time between 0 and 4 years of age, that kid is really building the foundation to learn. And so when we're not teaching them to be able to sit still and pay attention in little bits at a time, you can't expect the child to just sit there. But if you build that, you will surely get that. But that's a process, and we had that blueprint down about 100 years ago, and now we have lost it altogether. But, for example, with a mom's, especially a mom's voice and saying, no, honey, I needed to sit down right now. And those are tones that are very helpful to a child, very soothing but very firm. They build a route that the child will take. And regarding the unplugging, I agree with you so much about that a child should not be connected to a cell phone or a tablet. If we could make it 3 to 4 years of age, so much better, because those brain pathways are really forming, and that instant gratification that comes from being digitally connected is very hard for them to break, and it's almost like a toxin in their brain when you see them play more and more, and you take the tablet away, they really have almost what looks like an intentional seizure. And so the less that we provide them with that kind of connection, digital connection, I think our children will do better. And obviously, we will build better relationships. I had a little boy who was 2.5 to 3, and he was not speaking. But when he came into the office, I realized that he was making these funny little noises. I looked up at the TV, and they had a cartoon, and I forgot what they were called, tummy tumblers or something like that. But they were making these little noises, beep, 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 beep. The child was making the same noise. He thought he was a cartoon.
Oh, my goodness. That is such an interesting point. Rosemary, thank you so much for being on the show. Sandy, thanks for the great call. You two could go to lunch and just talk all day. That's fascinating. I wish we had more time, Rosemary. We'll get you back on. I have lots more questions. But for now, have a great weekend. It is 56 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break and be back. Good morning. Bill Arnold here. It's been a fun week, and it's already Friday. I can't wait for the weekend. Can't believe I just said that. We've got a great second hour coming up. Jamar Tisby is going to talk about Black History Month. That's going to be fun. And Chris Martin, the Millennial Evangelical. It's fun to say as well. Chris Martin's going to come on in the second hour. We're going to talk about the latest stuff going on with millennials. We'll take a little break when we come back. We've got lots more with Faith Radio Mornings. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.